It was just another Tuesday. Or so I thought. I had just gotten back from the Swanee Club on La Brea, with nothing to accompany me home but a half pack of Marlboros and my old friend Jim Beam. As I slumped down in my office chair and began to shut my eyes, I heard a faint knocking on my door. "Who's there?" I barked, snapping out of my stupor and sitting up in my chair.
"I'm looking for P.I.J.D. Are you him?"
A damsel in distress. Of course. The dame made me dizzy. A real looker. She wasn't from around these parts and had the look of a gal who'd ask for your car keys just so she could drive over your hat.
"I heard you're the best private eye around."
She was lying, of course. I'm all she could afford. But I didn't care. Compliments are fleeting in my world, and so are paid jobs these days.
"I'm looking for a missing friend. I haven't seen him in days, and I can't figure out why."
"Oh?"
"A basketball player."
"You'll have to be more descriptive."
"Well, he's 6'9", left-handed, has red hair, and, oh yeah, he has a giant neck tattoo that says, name it."
It wasn't a lot to go by. Her description could have been a million, fellas. But it was a start. All right, doll. I'm on the case.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's J.D. Bunkus.
Holla!
And this is Sportsnet's new weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. A world-famous podcast now, by the way. Well, maybe not world-famous, but we got some nice pub after our debut episode last week. Washington Post, CBS Sports, others talking about our interview with Masai Ujiri. If you missed that, hit us up on iTunes and check it out. It's well worth your time. Also, hit that subscribe button while you're there. Except, J.D., I got a little bone to pick about some of the pub we got from the last episode.
Hit me.
Bay Area News, more specifically, the San Jose Mercury News.
Uh-oh.
These guys got to get their facts right and give credit where it's due. They credited the Washington Post for our Masai interview when they were quoting it. That's just, it's BS, and frankly, it's bunk journalism. And I got a problem with that. I got a big problem with that. That's right. I'm calling you out, San Jose Mercury News. And I'll tell you another thing, McMahon. Anyways.
San Mercury News, very illegit. Got Dave Zarum all fired up.
Well, it's not cool.
While we're sharing gripes, can I share a quick gripe as well?
Yeah.
Just on the elevator up here. I heard these guys talking about the playoffs.
Playoffs?
That was it. That was the issue.
Really?
I'm so tired of the Jim Mora voice, okay? Can we retire that? It's not funny anymore. What year did that come out? Like, that's got to be, what, 92, 93? Maybe I'm way off on that, but it's old. We've heard your playoffs impression. Just couch it. Keep it yourself.
If you're listening, JD would like you to stop saying playoffs.
Playoffs? No more. That's it.
Anyways, we've got another huge show ahead for you today. We're going to break down everything in Raptor land. How worried should Raptors fans be after game one? It was pretty ugly after all, but there's a lot of basketball still to be played. We'll break down the bounce back potential for Kyle Lowry and look at Paul Pierce's case for the title of the Raptors' all-time biggest nemesis. Later on, we're going to check in with Raptors assistant coach Tom Stirner, TV Tom, you might know him as.
The best.
And also we're gonna chat with Charles Oakley. Oak. Everyone loves Oak.
Stud.
So like I said, a lot of stuff. But let's get right into it. Game one is now in the rearview mirror. Game two drops tonight. We're taping this on a Tuesday. And you kind of feel like there's panic in the streets of Toronto.
Kinda?
There is panic in the streets of Toronto because of the quality of basketball game we witnessed on Saturday, which is to say a terribly low quality basketball game. You know, looking back on it quickly, I'm cool with the fact that the Raptors had a bit of a stinker, that they shot so poorly for 3.5 quarters. I can live with having a bad game, and the fourth quarter comeback was, you know, I thought a lot more indicative of how this team can expose the Wizards going forward. But to see them claw their way back and then lay that egg in overtime, that was really hard to watch for me. And you have to wonder how much worse it was made by having your best player, Kyle Lowry, sitting out on the bench. I mean, that can't be a formula for success for this team.
No, I think if there's any type of long-term concern right now, it has to be with Kyle Lowry. Dwayne Casey in the post game mentioned that he's not. I'm probably misquoting him here, but he said basically, I'm not worried about Kyle. I have full confidence that he's going to bounce back and he's going to be a much better player in game two. Problem is that I'm not sure Kyle Lowry's healthy. Like, have we seen the same guy that we saw before the season? Like, I just want to give you a couple quick numbers here. Through March 18th, which is when he got injured, he was shooting 41.5% from the floor and 34% from three. Since the injury, almost 10% down from the field and 4% down from three. And it's the numbers back up the eye test. I mean, when Kyle Lowry stepped into a three-pointer during the regular season, you felt confidence behind that shot.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, Kyle stepping into it. Oh, this is good. I'm feeling real nice about this. Now, whenever I see Kyle Lowry pull up for that three-pointer, I'm kind of sitting there like, oh, please go in. Please go in. And it didn't used to be this way. We had better times, Kyle. So you got to wonder, and not to crush the guy because he's been the heart and soul of this team all season, but on the defensive end too, like, he had a rough night. Like, and even on the play where he got fouled out, like, to bite on that pump fake, stick his butt out.
They're going to need him defensively just as much as they're going to need him offensively, especially with the way that these Wizards guys, like Wall especially, obviously.
And the rebounding.
Can expose these guys. Yeah, and we're going to talk about the rebounding, hopefully, with Oak a lot, because that was the most glaring kind of deficiency on the Raptors' part.
There's one guy that knows rebounding. It's Charles Oakley.
Yeah, exactly. So Lowry had a rough go of it. You wonder how much gas is left in the tank. Maybe, you know, it's he's been relied on a lot during the season.
Why did they give him so many minutes in those last few regular season games?
Like the last game of the
season.
Are you
okay with that?
I think he played like 40 minutes in the last game of the season.
Yeah, the first night of that back-to-back to when he came back, he played like 33.
My theory is that Casey tried to pull him and he just said no. You know, he just said, you know, I'm not ready to leave. I'm feeling it, whatever the case is. And he forced the issue there because that's the only way it makes sense to me, because obviously logic would say that you need to rest this guy ahead of the playoffs.
Yeah. And I know,
they want to shake off Russ. Yeah.
Get his rhythm back going. But so far it hasn't worked. And he's got to figure something out quick, because if he's shooting the ball this way, he's playing defense this way, it's going to be a quick series for the Raptors.
No question, which will be a shame because of the excitement that we all knew would come surrounding this team. To watch that Jurassic Park scene unfold one more time last week, was just awesome. Big shout out to Masai Ujiri for getting the crowd going again with his updated rallying cry against the other team.
You gotta love Masai, like a minute before going, hey everybody, say hi to Adam Silver, he's in the crowd, and then dropping the S-bomb.
It was an expensive rallying cry, but he can afford it, and I'd say it's worth every penny if he's gonna keep giving entertainment like that. Obviously what he said was in response to Paul Pierce. Obviously what he said was in response to Paul Pierce, who's just been playing the villain card perfectly.
I love it too.
I mean, I think this guy is just playing mind games with everybody. The Raptors, his own teammates, the press, front office folk. I mean, he's got everyone kind of in his palm. He's winning right now. Paul Pierce is winning.
Paul Pierce has been winning for a long time.
Yeah.
I get it. People want to hate him. He's a villain. Listen, first of all, I'm siding with the ACC crowd. Big props to the ACC crowd for the Paul Pierce sucks chant. I loved it. I got to say, the first couple minutes of that game, I was so amped up.
Wait, hold on. Tell the people the note you wrote down while watching the game. The first note you wrote down. Telling me yesterday.
Yeah, my first note was something along the lines of, actually, I have it right here. Paul Pierce sucks chant. I mean, it fires me up. Huge boost. Let's see if he has a good game. Track his stats.
And what do those stats say?
Those stats are pretty goddamn good.
You know, I wonder how much of it is, you know, when you win a championship, it gives you the right to just kind of dominate everyone else's psyche. You know, he's been there before, Paul Pierce. And I think Raptors fans have followed his career since the beginning, because he was kind of always linked in with Vince Carter in that same draft class, guys playing the same position at the time.
Yep.
So, I mean, I know I was always following Pierce, kind of using it as a measuring stick for Vince in a way. So it's no secret how good he is. It's been really cool to see how he can keep his game going and adapt as he gets older and as his skills, you know, change. I don't want to say diminish, but change.
A lot of guys have brought this up before. He's got an old man's game, and so he's going to age well. That's the thing. He's going to age well. And it's one thing to be a trash talker. Like, you know, you ever go play pickup hoops and there's that guy that's the big loud mouth, but he's terrible. Paul Pierce is not that guy. And that's what you got to love about him, is that he's soaking up the villain role, but he's backing it up. He's hitting huge shots in that series. And I got to say this one thing, and this is kind of the troubling issue for me for the Raptors going forward, actually, is that Paul Pierce, sneaky, really good isolation defender.
Yeah.
He has
He's got size, strength. He knows what he's doing.
He's owned DeMar DeRozan. Like, in this regular season, when they were matched up together, thank God for SportVU. What a fantastic invention that this is.
It's pretty cool.
SportVU basically shows that when these two have been matched up, Paul Pierce is holding DeMar DeRozan to 27% from the floor. When Paul Pierce faces guys in isolation plays, he holds them to 30% from the floor. Mm. Those are awesome numbers. And for a team like the Raptors that rely heavily on isolation ball, that's trouble. So they're going to have to figure something out. And that's why I think this team needs a lot more ball movement going forward. You saw some of those old habits. I texted you during the game. You're seeing some of the old habits really coming through right now, which is the ball sticking. They're getting really too stuck on the ISO ball. And when the ball's not dropping, then it spells trouble for the Toronto Raptors.
Mm-hmm. How much of that do you think was like a... It looked like the Raptors were just frozen, kind of not scared of the moment.
Start time?
No, not start time. Just like the atmosphere, the national, the ESPN coverage, the pressure from the crowd. I think the Raptors looked really affected by that negatively. I mean, just the way they were, like everything you're talking about, not sharing the ball, the isolation, it just looked like everything was like a last ditch effort. They weren't playing their brand of basketball. They were just like deer in the headlights.
See, I kind of felt the opposite out of the gate, where it was just like, I thought the Raptors were feeding off the energy early. But the problem is when you have that, I agree a little bit with the pressure, which is that when things start to go awry, all of a sudden, that pressure is compounded. So, but off the beginning,
because we've seen it all season. Like when they play those American National games, they always come out stiff and they never look quite the same.
I think that though some of it did have to do with the start time. I don't think that's an overblown thing. I mean, you want to believe like, hey, these guys are professional athletes. They're great basketball players. They should be able to play no matter what time of day it is. But you throw guys out of their rhythm, like the pro athletes, and this has been done to death. But they're creatures of habits. They go through the same routine just about every single day. So to have them be the first playoff game, playing at 12:30, which is just a super odd start time,
yeah.
I think that definitely had a part to play. But again, I thought that they fed off the energy early, but when things started to go a little bit wrong, slow down, that's when you started to see them crack a little bit.
Listen, just earlier you mentioned how Paul Pierce is effective on defense. He can help stop guys like DeRozan. But Pierce, the highest scorer of the game with 20 points. Who can stop Paul Pierce on this team?
Tell me where in the world is
James Johnson.
Where the hell is James Johnson?
Whew.
I mean,
fans were not happy with that.
Last week we talked about how Hansbrough's play, and he ended up getting the start, by the way, which yep. you mentioned last week. We mentioned about Hansbrough's play, how it's going to affect Johnson's minutes. Someone's going to be the odd man out of the rotation, but I don't think either of us expected that would mean 0 minutes.
I didn't expect it. But I wasn't shocked by it.
You were in shock.
I you're right. I was. I'm just a liar. Don't believe anything I say for the rest of this podcast. I'm just gonna lie to you the rest of the way through. But no, seriously, like that, we've seen Dwayne toy with his lineup all season, and James Johnson is often the odd man out. So it wasn't a complete stunner to me. I mean, just from the standpoint of, if you had told me before the game started, hey, JJ's not gonna play tonight, I wouldn't have been like, oh, you're out of your mind. I would have been like, oh, okay, it was one of those games. This is the thing. The Raptors need James Johnson in this series. There's no question in my mind about it. He's I'm pretty sure he's fourth on the team in PER this season. He's a multifaceted player that does a lot for that team.
Yeah.
Here's the only thing I'll say. The story's overblown. No?
Whether or not James Johnson played?
Well, from the first game.
It's obviously not overblown because we're talking about it now. We only talk about the most relevant stories.
I think that it's a little bit overblown. It's something worth talking about, no doubt about it. But the Raptors weren't exactly having a ton of trouble getting stops. And everyone's talking about Paul Pierce killing them. Like, Paul Pierce had 17 points in regulation of that game.
Okay, but here's where I think James Johnson would have helped a lot. And here's why I think we're going to see him more in the future. We mentioned up top, rebounding was the biggest problem for the Raptors. It was 61-48, something
sure.
like that. And it looked worse. James Johnson, when you look at, you know, you love your SportVU numbers.
Mm-hmm.
SportVU. Anyways, you love your numbers. It says that James Johnson is one of this team's best rebounders.
When he is. He has one of the highest rebounding rates of the team.
So he can help you in an area where you need a lot of help in.
There's no question about that.
Why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Okay, so this is why I didn't think you could take advantage of that in some spots. One was that the Raptors were having more trouble on the offensive end than the defensive end during that game. They were actually doing a great job of containing John Wall on ball screens, which I was almost borderline shocked with.
But a lot of it is they were almost like too active in terms of like helping out with John Wall.
But okay, and that's another issue though. So I'll run down this really quickly. They did. They had some problems with overhelping, and one of the biggest offenders.
Also, the Wizards played as badly as Raptors offensively. I think that, you know, I don't know how much credit, give credit to the Raptors defense, but the Wizards are, they looked pretty ugly as well.
Sure. But that's.
I feel like I might have just derailed your train of thought there.
Nah, I got it back. I'm always back on that train. I was just going to say that the Raptors overhelped a lot in that game. James Johnson, he tends to do that quite a bit. So in some of those situations where you saw Paul Pierce get open shots, there's nothing really to say that JJ was going to be out guarding Paul, basically denying him the ball or sticking on him the entire time, right? Like the Raptors all know that Paul Pierce can shoot the three ball. They're not trying to let him shoot open threes, but they were victims of overhelp. Two is that where does he slide in? Like he's a victim of the depth of this team. If you look at the guard positions, there's really nowhere for him to play unless you dial back on Terrence Ross's minutes. But he's the best shooter on the team. I know he struggled out of the gate, but
the best shooter on the team?
Terrence Ross.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's the best shooter on the team. 3-point shooter? No question. I just think that you need to try to get T. Ross getting going in his rhythm. We saw how devastating it was last year against Brooklyn when he wasn't hitting anything. And I know, again, he had a tough start.
What are you
start.
Basing that T. Ross thing on?
What am I basing T. Ross, best shooter on the team?
Yeah.
I think that he's the best 3-point shooter on the team. I think wide open in an open gym, he's going to knock him down the most.
Way to clarify that. Okay, so really quick before we jump forward
Wait,
here.
Wait, one last thing on JJ here, though. All right. One last thing on JJ.
Right. Make it quick.
The rebounding, while they need it, who's coming out in the front court for JJ? Because it has to be a front court player that we've established.
I think
that.
If we see the Wizards go small with that Paul Pierce at the four, which I think they're going to do more and more, that's your opportunity.
And then I just think that the rebounding thing, that's more on they need to find more time for JV. He's their best defensive rebounder. You talk about rebounding rate. He leads their team by far. He's the guy that you need to see in there a little bit more.
Cool. Real quick here. Who's going to win this series? The Raptors still have a chance to win it.
Of course they still have a chance.
Well, let me say it differently. Will the Raptors win the series?
Yes.
I think so too. I think what we saw in the end of the fourth quarter there, I think what we saw in the end of the fourth quarter there, it was completely sustainable for the Raptors. It didn't look like a mirage or some miraculous run. I think they can still pull this out. But tonight, Tuesday night, game two is a huge one. All right, still to come, we're going to go around the association, take a look at the rest of the playoff action, talk to our buddy Charles Oakley. But first, we're going to catch up with Raptors assistant coach Tom Stirner. You might know him as TV Tom. He's going to tell us about the three keys to the perfect halftime interview.
Perfect sideline interview. I don't know if I'm perfect at it by any stretch of the means, number one. But I'll give you a little background as to why I do it the way
That'd
I do.
That'd be great, yeah.
When I was with the Orlando Magic, I had to do a little segment before every game focused on a play for that night that the other team was running. It could have been focused on a shooting technique. It could have been different things. So it was like a tip from Tom that they had on the Magic. I had a director at that point in time. Every time I didn't stare at the camera or make eye contact with the camera, she would say, stop, and she would make me do it again.
Right.
So when I got into that mode, it was something that I had always done every time, is that she wanted me to envision that camera was a person and I was talking directly to that person.
Right.
So if you're talking about interviews and you want to make a point, people are going to notice if you make eye contact with them, just like you do when you talk to somebody.
Yeah.
The other thing she was always on me about was enthusiasm. If I didn't bring enthusiasm, if I didn't bring energy, if I didn't bring an energy, she would stop and make me do it again.
Right.
So they were the two biggest things. And then obviously the third thing was you have to know what your subject and talking
that
about.
That definitely helps.
So if you make eye contact and you bring enthusiasm and you have knowledge, you're coming with some type of fact, something with that has factual information that the viewers can identify. We always wanted to use those three things as the footprint for what we tried to do with every one of the broadcasts. Right. I'll tell you what, the clip that I go back and A Few Good Men.
Oh, yeah?
You can't handle the truth. You know, like, that speech was one that I played over in my head a lot of times because it was powerful.
Yeah.
It was emotional. It was what he believed was the truth at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And even though it probably wasn't and it was wrong,
right,
he still delivered it in a very positive vein. I have a lot of songs. I've gone over the years from pop to I even enjoy country now, you know, and you know, there's a lot of country singers. Jason Aldean, I think, is a really powerful, you know, country singer. And and then obviously in the pop world, you got Timberlake and, you know, again, people more closer to my generation than some of the other people. But I think there's a variety of things. My daughter, Paige, is really into music, so she provides me with a lot of music.
Oh, cool.
You know, a lot of music. She has over 64 gig of music on her phone, and I've got the same 64 gig, so I'm exposed to a little bit of everything, and she keeps me up to speed with all that.
So, a couple takeaways from that. One, whoever that lady was that gave him those TV cues, let's get a round of applause for that lady. You have made Raptors halftime so much more entertaining. Can we get a forwarding address for her? Because we could get some tips from that lady. I mean, like, Sportsnet personalities, let's get her on the thing. Other thing, not crazy about the music choices, Tom Stirner. Look us up.
I thought that was really sweet.
What was the country singer?
Music.
That is sweet. Upside of having a daughter, I guess. Fresh 64 gigs of music.
So. All right, so this is Free Association. He's J.D. Bunkus, the guy you've been listening to ranting for a little
painfully.
While. I'm Dave Zarum. Remember, you can catch us on sportsnet.ca every week. We tend to drop on Tuesdays.
And also
iTunes. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Because if you don't, you're probably a terrible person and we don't agree with your values.
You're definitely a terrible person.
Okay, so let's take a look around the association. A lot happening around the league. My first takeaway here, you know, did you see the Cavs-Celtics series?
The game?
The game, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I saw
The whole series is over.
Yeah, it's over. Well, basically, I mean.
Well, it's going to be over because if Kyrie Irving can keep doing this, if he's playing like at this level, that Cavs team is unstoppable. And I would change my Spurs pick to the Cavs in a second if Irving can sustain this.
That's a pretty good playoff debut, Kyrie Irving.
Amazing.
Because
also the knock on him before was that he couldn't. He wasn't like a winning team type of player. He was a stats bad team guy. Obviously, he's shaked that during especially the last 2 months of the season. But that's why I really didn't have huge expectations for him heading into game one of the playoffs.
You know what helps you shake that image as well? Getting LeBron James on your team.
That tends to help
you out just a touch. No, I loved what I saw from Kyrie. Great debut.
Listen, he's no James Jones.
That series is going to be over. And yeah, the Cavs, I mean, they're going to be tough. Nobody in the East is going to beat them, I don't think.
No, I don't think it's going to be even close.
See, I think it's going to be close. I think the Hawks get a little disrespected.
But they're a little banged up. Horford
they
might
are.
Be a little hurt.
And
now.
The Thabo injury is actually sneaky impactful, right? Yeah. And when you look at a guy that's going to be a stopper, we talked earlier about James Johnson and having a guy that can go out and play solid perimeter defense. Thabo's that guy.
What did you think about? Did you watch the Clippers Spurs?
I loved Clippers Spurs. Although
the way Griffin dismantled the forwards on San Antonio was really troubling for me and you, two guys who picked the Spurs to win it all.
I'm not going to overreact.
I'm going to speak for you right
to game one and just say that the Spurs are done. But damn, the Clippers are good. And this is why I was. I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but I've definitely spoken to you about how upset I was that we got Spurs Clips round one.
Because that's a Western Finals.
Well, yeah, it's just those are two of the best three teams in the West, in my opinion. And they're playing in the first round, and we're kind of getting cheated, I think, a little bit. I mean, at least they're going to play each other, but we're still getting cheated out of it. And I really wanted to see Z-Bo go up against Blake. I just love that rivalry.
I totally overlooked the potential of Aaron Baines being like on every poster.
Yeah. Oh, my
He's just
God.
The perfect culprit for
hey,
that.
Hey, good on him for coming over and trying to help.
And he'll do that every time. Like, he's not going to back down, even after getting dunked on three
times. But the one spin move, too, Blake had right off Corey Joseph, and that did you see the freeze frame of Kojo and, I think it was Diaw?
Yeah.
Looking back at Blake. I loved that shot. That was incredible. But yeah, Blake Griffin was a man possessed, and Chris Paul
too,
like,
yeah.
Wow. DeAndre Jordan, max player, right?
For sure. I mean, but we talked about it before. Like, is he going to opt out or not?
I think he opts out. He has to, right? He has to. The thing about DeAndre, and you watch that game, is just how much he affects what you can do offensively. His defense in the paint, I don't think it's, I mean, you got Rudy Gobert and him. And those are the premier top two guys. And I just think it really screwed up what the Spurs want to do, either getting it down low or letting their guards drive into the paint.
If you want DeAndre Jordan to be a big part of your team at all, those free throws are such a liability. I mean, that's really going to hurt you at some point. So you hate paying max money to a guy who's going to get to the line a lot and you know he can't convert it. But Will Chamberlain couldn't shoot free throws either, so I guess it's all right.
So would you say that series is going to be the most competitive, like go down to the wire, seven games?
I hope so, just from an entertainment perspective. That's the one I want to see the most of.
Okay, yeah. I think that's going to be our best series in
the
first
round. I think Wizards-Raptors is going to go seven.
Wizards-Raptors probably go seven. This one probably
goes
seven.
Everything else, though, I mean...
There's nothing else really that good.
I was going to say, like, it's pretty much chalk at this point of when you look around. I know it's early, one or two games for most series, but everything's going pretty much as expected. Still, you know, we still love watching it. Playoff basketball is nothing like it.
The disappointing one for me is Grizz Blazers. We were kind of through the midway point of the season. I was sitting there thinking to myself, man, I really kind of underestimated the Blazers going into this
year. The Wes Matthews thing really hurts.
The Wes Matthews thing really hurts. It looks like they might get Aaron Aflalo back for game two, but it's not going to matter because they drew a terrible first round matchup for them. They have no answer for Zebo and Marcus Gasol. And I know that goes for a lot of teams, but man, like, having LaMarcus Aldridge try to guard those guys, that's real trouble. And they held the Blazers to 33% from the floor in game one.
Yeah, it's a great series, too, because it's two amazing home crowds. What home crowd stood out for you so far?
Raptors.
All right, fair answer. Bring me up, man. All right, so we still got a lot to come. But right now, we're going to talk with former Raptor and a guy who knows his way around the glass, Charles Oakley.
Oh!
This is Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's JD Bunkus. JD, earlier, man, we were talking about the Raptors' rebounding problems against Washington.
And who better to bring in to talk about these issues than one of the greatest rebounders of all time, one of the league's best enforcers, friend of the show now, Charles Oakley. Charles, what's going on, man?
How you doing?
Hey, good, man. Hey, excellent, thanks for excellent. Making the time.
Now, first of all, Oak, before we get started here, I owe you a much belated shout out. There's no way you're going to remember this, but about 5-6 years ago, first of all, everyone out there has to go out and follow Oak on his Facebook page, like his Facebook page. About 5-6 years ago, you held a trivia contest. I forget what the question was, but I answered it correctly. And as a result, I won tickets and the opportunity to meet you down at a Bobcats game. Now, at the time I was living out east in the Maritimes in New Brunswick. So I couldn't make it to the game, but you helped me hook up those tickets with Big Brother Charlotte, and you gave that opportunity to a kid out there. So, Oak, big shout out to you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so to get us started, Lou Will up here in Toronto, he just won the Sixth Man of the Year award.
Yeah, Oak, we're looking at this. Right. We're looking at the Sixth Man. Do you think that the media overlooks guys like Tristan Thompson and Cleveland who come off the bench and provide defense and rebounding? It has become too much of a Gunner's award for you?
Well, you think about six man, it's instant offense. You, Jamal Crawford, a few other guys. Basically, a six man guy not going to be a hustle player, a guy who get rebound. They don't respect that part of the game. They think the award should be a more outstanding award. So it's a lot of BS to it, but, you know, that's how some stuff goes, and, you know, you have to deal with it. And Tristan Thompson's going to get a contract, $12, $15 million a year from somebody, so he's still going to get paid.
Yeah, it's going to work out for Tristan regardless. But, you know, the dirty work, the rebounding, we know how important that is in a game. And before I forget, you know, Oak's got some camps, some basketball camps coming up in Toronto this summer that he's running. We'll talk about that in a bit, too. But as far as the rebounding go, you know, we watched game one of the Raptors-Wizards series, and the Raptors got out-rebounded 61-48, and it looked like it was a lot worse than that. I've got a couple questions about that. One is, you know, there's a theory that a lot of that had to do with the post guys kind of overhelping or being overcautious of the perimeter guys like John Wall, Bradley Beal. Do you think there's any truth to that? You know, maybe pulled them away from the basket too much?
Well, really, out of the two, Bradley Beal on the shooter. So John Wall, you won't go under the pick. So I'll trap Beal, you know, run him off the shot.
Yeah.
Everybody else watching just basically, you know, Colter and Nene is basically, you know, jump shooters or no threat in the post. Mm-hmm. So I don't see where all the help coming from unless you're going to stunt on Beal. You know, they tell me when you stunt, the next half of the stunt for the next guy. So you don't have to stunt hard to John Wall, but stunt hard to Bradley Beal.
Yeah, and
so
we
my
actually...
thing is, it's your team rebound. I mean, you were there last year. You should have learned from when you played Jersey. I mean, that's not when your game for the click or the playoff for the click. That's when the individual realizes, hey, you was at a point last year, do better than we did last year, and do better this year, and do better. You got to do all the little things.
And now the other thing the players and coaches talked about was having to be more physical on the glass. But that's been something that we've kind of heard around this Raptors team all season. And, you know, what I want to ask you is, at what point is that something that you either have or you don't, you know, that drive to go to get after the glass?
Well, when you start shooting all jumpers, I mean, it's kind of ruin life. And everything you do, the fundamentals of them have to be part of the game. No matter what's over, how much money involved, how many high rides or dunkers you have, at the end of the day, you got to play defense, rebound, and know the principle of what you're doing every night on the court. And, you know, when you fall in love with the three, unless you go and say somebody, know you got guys who got a high IQ or making shots, mm-hmm. I mean, some teams can't play like that. You got to find your own dimension and through the game and make the best for what your team, you know, I think, you know, they should post up more. The guy, you know, so you can't just shoot threes and be efficient in this game.
And that's something that you discovered pretty early on. I want to ask you when, you know, in the evolution of yourself as a player, like at what point did you discover that rebounding and hustle was going to be how you were going to earn your paychecks?
Well, my thing is knowing what's around you and knowing what, you know, you can bring every night. You know, some guys going to score, shoot, you can be on and off. I think guys going to miss shots. I mean, it's just part of individual. I mean, I wasn't a great athlete, so I had to know what I could do. I can be successful on the floor night in, night out. And I think the game, it's not a thinking game now. Guys just playing, they don't think. They just do. So that could hurt a lot of teams in the playoffs. Guys just do. You don't understand fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because we wanted to bring this up with you, talking about fundamentals in the game today. When you were up here in Toronto, which was really cool, by the way, for the 20th anniversary, having all the old alumni coming up, you mentioned that there's more bad games than good these days and that the game's changing. What's your biggest gripe with the modern-day NBA?
Well, the game I was at, did you see the first quarter?
Yeah,
80 air balls.
Unfortunately.
About 7 minutes free throws and about 7 turnovers. That was just in the first 8 minutes of the game. So how do you think that was, you know, sit down and watch that for 4 quarters? But the change of the game is that's what they want. That's global. They want international guys to come over here. They finesse and they fit right in when you can call fouls. You don't want hand checking. You change the rules to make money. That's
yeah.
What I look at it.
I mean, I think you just nailed it. You know, when I look at it, I think it's kind of the lack of a better word, the sissification of basketball. I mean, and I think it's almost like a further extension or an evolution of how our society is right now. You know, like kids, you can't have peanut butter at schools and you have to sign a waiver form for everything. And in the NBA, I mean, you touched on it, like guys get teed up just for talking now. Your hand brushes against someone after a timeout and it's a flagrant foul. Do you think this is hurting the competitive spirit at all of what's going on?
No, I don't think competitive because at the end of the day, your weaker team's going to be weak. Your better teams with the understanding of guys with IQ will always win championships now because it's just no like, you know, you look at Golden State with that team, you know, Mark Jackson won 50 games 2 years in a row. I mean, it was fit to get better. And they drafted, and the only players they got on the team came through the draft, that's about. And I mean, they stressed the key players. So that's good. They got a chance to grow together. And, you know, they got some guys you can tell they worked on the game. They didn't just go out on vacation and lay out and go to the club in the summertime. So that's a big difference. It's what you want. And I think that you look at Curry, both of the guys who on that team, you think about it, they dad played in the NBA. That's a plus.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a goal, I guess, you know, for them two guys just like, work, and show it. Not because my dad made it, I got a chance. I got a chance because I can play basketball. And a lot of the kids now in the league, just they pushing you through because they need the product. And you don't have to be that good.
Hey, Charles, we wanted to get your thoughts out. Now at Sportsnet here, we have a new Raptors analyst. He was on the show last week. Friend of the show, Alvin Williams. We were wondering if you had any good Alvin Williams stories for us.
You know, he's just a tough guy. You know, got a chance. He waited. You know, he went through a lot to get the job. When he kind of got the job and showed everybody he could play and lead, he did a great job with the Raptors and played, you know, a number of years and come back and give back. Now he on the air. He was a scout for the team for many years. Now he on the air. We talk a lot. That's one of the guys I'm trying to do the camp with this summer. And we talk about All-Star. And, you know, I think teams in this league, especially when you're a young team trying to get to that point, you need guys who've been around, guys who've been through the ropes, guys who understand. Not just putting people over there just to make guys happy. The guys over there are going to make them guys work.
you know, you mentioned kind of having to go through it as a player, but I think, you know, we're seeing here in Toronto right now, a fan base that has kind of gone through that growth over the years. When you think back to when you were playing here, when you think about that scene outside the stadium during the playoffs, they call it, you know, Jurassic Park, thousands of people sitting outside, watching the game outside of a sold out arena. Is that something that you ever envisioned while you were playing here? The game growing to that extent?
I mean, they love the sport. They learned about the game, and now they love the game. And I think when you love the game, it's not. But I think the fans are later going to say, okay, when are we going to get a hump? I mean, we get in the playoff. When are we going to get to the next level? When are we going to see something different? And that's just guys with IQ and DMs, you know.
Yeah.
You can only, you know, make so much out of what you got. Then fans are going to look at you, what the next over-the-top move. So, I mean, the fans is great. I mean, you know, they lunch. You know, I had a up and down with my first couple of years, but it was a transition to a hockey town. So
yeah, that's right.
They, you know, they going by what they know in hockey, but I think the fans is great. I mean, you know, they show me love, and you know, and I see them all over. I'm on the airport, or going through, taking an hotel. I mean, just fans everywhere from the, you know, in Miami a lot, and Bahamas, but you know, I think they just got to, you know, suck it up. I think they get that. They're a team that in the middle of the road. Atlanta did that for 7-8 years in the middle of the road. They made the playoff first round go home. They did it for 7-8 years, and you know they kept making changes and making changes. Now they won 6-7 games. I couldn't believe it, but they won it.
Hey man, the fans have been great, and you know they showed you a lot of love when you came here to Toronto recently. One guy though, not showing you a lot of love, is James Dolan. What's the deal with that guy?
I don't know. The man would shake my hand last year, also I knew one. I mean, I just don't understand. I asked other owners about him. They said he's they don't say nothing good about him either. But I mean, sometimes life people just, I mean, I don't know. I have 1,000,001 people in New York and 1,000,010 hate him. So I guess he hate me, but 1,000,000. I mean, I'd rather for one person hate me than 1,000,000 plus hate. Yeah. So no. I'm still in the front of the class, and he might have $1 billion, but you know, he's not like it. So yeah. His money sometimes ain't good in some places.
Man, I don't think there's a single good James Dolan story. Also, his music is terrible that we've heard.
Yeah, does this mean you're not picking up his album anytime soon?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't listen to his music. Man, won't shake my hand. Yeah. But you better watch out. You better be in the same room with me. I'm going to find him. I might have something to say to him real warm.
Yeah. We'll relay the message. Listen,
I'm warm and warm. All you have to do is just put his a green tea bag, and he can drink it.
Well said. Listen, we mentioned up at the top. Talk about your basketball camps. What you got planned this summer in Toronto? What we can expect from?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think you know I met with some guys doing All Star in New York, and when I came up there for the 20th anniversary and the Bobblehead Night, and just trying to do some stuff this summer and lead up to next year with some kids around the city, and mm-hmm. just try to. Still how positive, you know, is learning fundamentals, especially trying to get into ball. I mean, it's just basketball is so much hype, and kids not learning the fundamentals. And, you know, you can play AAU and look good. If you're good, if not, you're going to look bad. You're just going to be standing out of there like, you know, it's like standing outside the road with your thumb out to try to get a ride. Ain't too many people going to pick you up often.
Yeah, I know you've done a lot of great work in New York, so excited to hear or see what you guys do up here in Toronto. One other thing we got to ask you. So, we know you're a big chef. You were on Chopped. You had, Cafe Oakley. So when you come up to Toronto, what do you cook? What's on the menu for Dave and I? What are you cooking us up?
I mean, you got to tell me what you like. I'm going to try to make it to my best of ability. But every time I cook, I'll tell you, you tell me what you want. I always add 3 things. So you tell me 4 or 5. Tell me 4 dishes, and I'm gonna add 3 dishes.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. I'm a big chicken guy, so maybe some.
That's one of the things I'm going to do next year when the All-Star in New York, Toronto, I'm going to come up like 2 weeks. I'm going to probably be up there like 2 weeks before, and I'm going to do some cooking and expand, you know, different places.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
Like 40 or 50 people, so maybe twice a week and just, you know.
No, we got to get some of that.
We got to get you in here, you know, to the Chatelaine Test Kitchen, do some cooking. You know, maybe we'll have a competition with Amir Johnson, fancies himself a good
cook. Yeah, that's right. He thinks he's good, too.
Whenever, just let me know, all right?
We will, man.
We will. Listen, really appreciate this, Oak. All the best, man. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Later.
Never gonna give you up. No matter how you treat me, never gonna give you up.
This is Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's J.D. Bunkus. Remember, catch us on sportsnet.ca. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave a good comment. Oak, man, that was a lot of fun.
Five-course meal.
It's an embarrassment of riches.
That's what Oak's bringing to the table. When you sit down at Cafe Oakley, it's a five-course meal.
Yeah, he's not messing
what,
around.
What? How many courses are you serving if I come to Dave Zarum's place for dinner? You're cooking something up.
0 to 1.
0 to 1. Wow. Yeah, I got like three. It depends
on what
What's
you're
a
bringing.
Course? Well, is it a dish?
You got your apps.
Yeah. Oh, so like, yeah, we're getting... So what, like apps... Dinner, dessert, that's three courses. What?
You know
Where's
what,
all the other
I'm
courses?
Gonna, I'm going to let Oak figure out. He's the chef. He's the chef, not
okay,
me.
Okay, I guess,
and
yeah.
And obviously not you
I'm
either.
Way out of touch with this. The one thing that I also want to, yeah, obviously not me. No, definitely not me.
We're learning
Takeout master over here. The one thing we got to shout out a little bit was Lou Williams getting the sixth man award.
Yeah.
Congrats to him. Really awesome season from Lou.
Except, did he get a Kia for winning it? Like, was that his prize? Or was it just sponsored by Kia?
Everybody gets a Kia in the NBA. Blake Griffin got a Kia.
That seems like a lot of work for nothing.
And get Lou a Kia.
No offense to Kia. I mean, if they end up sponsoring this show, I love Kia. But yeah, which girl gets that Kia? That's what I want to know.
That's the only gripe I have with his entire acceptance speech.
You think Blonde gets the Kia?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. That'd be my bet.
That's the gripe I have, though. He should have pulled the Kevin Durant with the two women and said, you know, to mug two girls, you the real MVPs. Are you the real sixth men, women? That would have been good. Something along those lines, Lou. Next time.
But right now, we're going to play some catch and shoot. It's rapid fire questions, end of shot clock kind of scenario. We get a question, we got to answer it quickly and move on to the next one. It's catch and shoot.
Don't hesitate. Just catch and shoot.
Okay, first up.
We don't give a shit about this!
Better Maasai rally cry? F Brooklyn, or we don't give a shit about it.
Duh. It's obviously F Brooklyn. There would be no we don't give an S without the F Brooklyn. It's a no-brainer. Next.
Terrence Ross was 3 from 11 from the field and 0 for 6 from 3. Should the Raptors dial back on T. Ross's minutes?
We talked about it earlier, maybe a little bit so you can give some room to James Johns potentially. But actually, I liked what Ross brought in that game. I'm cool with him getting just as many minutes.
God damn it, Dave Zarum. You stumped me earlier, but he is. He's the best Raptors guard. He's statistically the best Raptors shooter on the team. I like me some T-Ross. Like the way he shot the ball with confidence.
What's up next?
Pierce, 3 in the air. Got it again. The veteran puts his palm skyward to the crowd and says, how you like me now?
Paul Pierce is making a strong case for himself. But which player is the Raptors' all-time nemesis?
Oh, ho, ho.
Another no-brainer for me.
Whoa.
It's Vince. Of course it's Vince. We might have had the teary welcome back, Vince, but come on, man. That's the guy that Raptors fans are the most polarizing on. He's the guy that when he showed up at the ACC got booed the hardest. Well, it's Vince Carter.
Well, we'll see how polarizing it is when they put his rafter up his jersey up to the rafters in a bunch of years and everyone's cheering for Vince. I think it's... It's probably Paul Pierce. This is 2 years in a row. Another option that comes to mind is Kevin Garnett, maybe even not for the playoffs last year, but remember when he got down on all fours and kind of barked at Jose Calderon, and he also got in a fight with Matt Bonner.
I feel like KG's everybody's nemesis.
Yeah,
though.
Maybe it's a little too obvious. I like Pierce. I'll go forward with that one. All right, before we call it a day, as always, JD.
Hey, JD, who do we got and why do we hate him?
Well, you know who we got. We got the Wizards in our city right now, Washington. Why do we hate you? First up, your Metro cars have carpet? That's freaking disgusting. Not only that, it's like the least safe Metro system in North America, has had tons of accidents, and it's been smattered with discrimination claims for years. Dan Snyder owns one of your professional sports franchises. He's probably the worst owner in all pro sports. A franchise, by the way, which has a racist logo, your backward city refuses to change. Oh, by the way, you have the original crack-smoking mayor, Marion Barry. By the way, Marion Barry, he served a 6-month prison sentence for a drug charge, and then he ran again after it with the slogan, "He may not be perfect, but he's perfect for DC." A crack-smoking womanizer who doesn't pay his taxes. That's what's perfect for D.C. That's why we hate you, Washington, D.C.
Okay, easy there, GD. Are you all right? You all right? You need a little water or something?
I'm better than okay.
Need some fresh air?
No.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. This is Free Association. Make sure you catch us next week. I'm Dave Zarum. He's J.D. Bunkus. Hit that iTunes subscribe button, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
I smoked Joe's Cafe.
One day while I was eating beans.
I smoked Joe's Cafe.
Just sitting digging all the scene.
I smoked Joe's Cafe.
A chick came walking through the door that I had never seen before. At least I never saw her now.
I smoked Joe's Cafe.
Ooh, and I started shaking when she sat right down next to me.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.